I think about business now in some simple ways. There's a framework that I use in for myself and with others called knowledge, skills, and discipline. And one of the things I wish I had known is how to better balance those three things.
Welcome to the Alta Group Podcast on Real Estate. I'm your host, Tom Silva. Today, our guest is Craig Wortman, Professor of Entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago. Founder and CEO of Sales Engine, Craig has successfully created numerous companies, including Wisdom Tools and Clear Gauge. He is also author of the book, What's Your Story?, about the impact that storytelling has on leadership, strategic selling, and motivation. Craig, I want to open by asking you to define for us what it is that makes an entrepreneur. There's a sort of mystique, I think, around people who are self-made and who create a business from scratch. So can you give us a couple of thoughts about what it is that defines somebody as an entrepreneur?
It's a fascinating question, because once you begin to dig into entrepreneurship and the types of people and behaviors that are exhibited in starting a business or launching a business or even launching a new division of an existing business, you really start to, or at least I should say, I start to think that many people can be entrepreneurs. In fact, I think anybody can be an entrepreneur. So I have sort of a loose definition of entrepreneurship. Maybe an optimistic definition is a better term. When we explore it in the business school, one of the ways we get at this is there's some research being done on what makes an entrepreneur. One of the ways to frame that up for people is to think about how you view what's going to happen if you're an entrepreneur, if you become an entrepreneur, if you take this big leap and found a business. One of the things the research is showing is that many people look at becoming an entrepreneur in sort of a cause and effect. And it's the academic term is called causal logic. And so I think, well, here I am today, and I have these ideas, and I have these resources, limited as they may be. And I think if I do this, if I take this action, cause, right, it will have this effect. And what we find is that's actually not the best way to think about entrepreneurship. There's a different kind of logic that the world's most successful entrepreneurs use, and it's called effectual logic. And effectual logic is the opposite of cause and effect. Effectual logic sort of goes like this. I'm an entrepreneur, or maybe I'm an entrepreneur. I've got this idea. I have this limited set of resources, and I'm just going to begin. And I'm not exactly sure what the effect's going to be. And so it's not like causal logic where I'm at A and I expect to see B through some actions I'm going to take and some resources I'm going to deploy. An effectual thinker says, I'm at A, and you know what? I'm going to take a bunch of actions, and those actions will have outcomes, and I'll draw people to me on this journey. And you know what? I may end up at B, C, D, E, or F, and I don't really care. And that's such a powerful way to think, for me, to think about entrepreneurship, because it has this sort of underlying vibe of optimism, because my notion of entrepreneurship is just start. Anybody can do this. And the folks like us that study entrepreneurs, they're all different personality types. You don't have to be gregarious. You don't have to be an extrovert. You don't have to be deep in domain knowledge. Anyone can start a business. But the research would suggest that as long as we're not rigid in how we think about getting to a certain outcome, we will be more successful.
So after you take that leap of faith, Craig, what about the chaos that ensues between the time that you have the idea and you get to actually creating a business?
And I love that word that you use. That's my favorite word, because that's exactly how I describe it. When you're at time zero, between time zero and getting a company to where it's breaking even, right, where you're just starting to taste the ability to make money on this crazy idea or product or service that you have, it's complete chaos. And one of the things I work with my clients and my students on is embracing the chaos, because it's wonderful chaos. Is it stressful? Yes. Do you lose sleep and probably hair? Yes, you do. But it's wonderful chaos in the sense that you experiment, you try lots of things, right? And one of the ways I talk about that sort of time zero to break even chaos is I ask people, what is the think about the idea that you have. What's the relative value of the idea? And I think many of us get stuck as entrepreneurs because we think we put too much weight on the idea. You know, I have to have the next Google. I can't be an entrepreneur. I don't have the next Google. I'm not waking up in the middle of the night with the next idea for Facebook. I don't have that. And one of the things that we find is if we change the focus a little bit for people and we say, you know what? If you've got an idea, any idea, a thought about something that will do something for people that's a little bit better or a little bit different and better, right? You have a potential business. And what you need to do is begin taking action. Talk to customers. Go and talk to partners. Begin to formulate a product or a service and offer it to people. And you will be rejected. There is no question about it, right? You'll be rejected. Some people will say, that's a dumb idea, or I don't value that service. But if you keep embracing that chaos and making contact with the what I call making contact with the market, things will begin to take shape. And that's, you know, that's really how some structure and process begins to emerge from the chaos. One of the mistakes we make is we figure I've got to have all this structure and process if I'm going to have a successful business. You do eventually, but you don't initially. You really don't. You just need to get out there. You are the structure and you are the process. And yes, those things begin to emerge over time, but you can't possibly have that at time zero or anywhere close to time zero.
Craig, I wanted to ask you a practical question. I had lunch recently with a very successful CEO who told me that you should never start a business with your own money. You should always try and tap the investment market, go to the VC market, but using your own money is not advisable because you never get credit for it and it increases your risk. Any thoughts about the level of your own capital that you should put into a new business?
The way I think about sources of funds is I actually have the opposite opinion. I think that entrepreneurs should bootstrap. And there's a lot of reasons for that we can explore. If you look at the spectrum from what we call informal to formal investors. So informal starts with you, right? Informal is you pull it out of your own pocket, you take it out of your garage, you sell your car, you do whatever you have to do, right? The next step up that spectrum is family and friends. So your parents, your colleagues, that includes people you work with, right? People you work with, interestingly, they tend to invest a lot in you because they know your work ethic. They're the best people to fund a new business, to back you, because they know who you are and how you think and how you work, and that's key. Continuing up that spectrum, you have angel networks, which tend to be more formal, but less formal than banks and venture funds and private equity funds. And then all the way to the formal side of the spectrum, you have your classic venture capitalist, private equity, bank funding, government grants, that sort of thing. Entrepreneurs are best served in that chaos of starting a business to bootstrap it themselves. Do you risk your own money? Yes, you do. Of course you do. The trouble with raising to going all the way to the other formal end of the spectrum and getting venture is many venture funds will not back a business that doesn't have a proven revenue model. And most entrepreneurs start without that. So you are, you know, we have this misperception, I think, of entrepreneurship that you have this fantastic world-changing idea. That's mostly not true, right? There's only one Google, right? And you have to raise a ton of money to get this thing off the ground. Even technology companies that I mentor, they start with an Excel spreadsheet. They don't start with the full-blown iPhone app or the full-blown cloud computing system. They start with an Excel spreadsheet. And some of the smartest entrepreneurs I've met have said, you know, one of the big mistakes we made is we raised a bunch of money. We built the version one of the product. It was entirely wrong because the market rejected it or rejected 80% of the features. We, after a year of spending other people's money, which in the business school we call opium, other people's money, we burned it down and we started over. And what I wish I would have done is just started on a spreadsheet or just started with me verbally telling you about it, try to sell it to somebody, get some early market feedback. And then once you've wrung that out a little bit, you've started to build the startings of a product and you've got an economic model that's working, then venture becomes very interested. What I love about it, though, is it lowers the hurdles for people becoming entrepreneurs? I consider myself an entrepreneur. I've run two companies, had such a wonderful experience that, and a tough experience, but I just see that if we put two huge hurdles out in front of ourselves, got to have a world-changing idea, got to raise tons of money from a venture or a formal investor, I don't think we ever get out of bed.
Craig, what about the category problem that we have between entrepreneurship and selling? Entrepreneurship perceived as good, selling perceived, I think, as oftentimes very negative. Give us a sense of how those things interact.
They do indeed, and you've touched on one of my favorite subjects. Entrepreneurship is perceived in our country, and I think it's fair, I don't know this, but I think it's fair to say most of the world, as entrepreneurs are viewed as risk takers, innovators, world changers, passionate and enthusiastic people who are received very positively. And I think, by the way, that's all true. Tom, one of the ways I get at your great question is I ask people to write the word salesperson down, and I ask for a definition. Give me some characteristics of a salesperson. And it's fascinating what happens. It happens every time. They begin with, aggressive, organized, enthusiastic, charismatic, and you get these very positive words. And if you let that discussion go for just 30 seconds, you get sleazy, unethical, yucky, awkward, always trying to spin you, those sorts of things. Now, when you ask people to define entrepreneur, you never get those negative words. It is very rare that I do that and I get a negative association with entrepreneur. And therein lies the heart of your question. My reason for doing that kind of exercise with people is to begin breaking down the walls between entrepreneur and salesperson. They are the same. And that does not mean that you, as an entrepreneur, you have to be the salesperson of your company. But you have to begin like that. And I really am adamant about that with people. You, as an entrepreneur founder, you may be the most technical scientist in a lab the world has ever known, but you're the first person that has to talk about your idea. And if you're trying to talk about your idea and either raise money or convince people to work with your idea, that's called selling. And I don't define it any other way. And so I really try to help people think through, well, then what tools do you need to have those conversations? Right, and thereby break down these walls between entrepreneur and salesperson. At some point, you grow. You begin getting your first customers. The business begins to afford someone who can come in and do that job. Right, if you don't find yourself enjoying the process of selling, that's fine. But you have to be that salesperson. The entrepreneur as salesperson has to be true early.
So this leads to my next question, which is, who do you bring into your company? How do you create a team in order to thrive?
Finding the right people is a real challenge, because you have to. There's a great article called The Sales Learning Curve that defines the growth of an organization in the following way. They say, early on, when you're just starting a business, you need to be a renaissance person. And we all know what that means, to be a renaissance person. You're well-rounded, you're a good listener, you can talk about many different subjects in some sort of depth. And, we have sort of this image of Leonardo da Vinci as a renaissance person. And I think that's true. I think they're right on. And as the organization develops, you move through this stage, you move away from sort of being a renaissance person to what they call enlightened, and then finally to coin-operated salespeople, that you put a coin in my back and you train me and you give me a brochure and I just go sell. I knock on doors and I beat down doors. And I love that progression, because it also speaks to, for me, about the type of team you need. So early, you need people who can do a lot of different jobs. You need a renaissance person. That doesn't mean that you don't need, the smartest technical guy plus the smartest marketing person plus a great operations person. You do. But again, the realities of entrepreneurship is you can't afford those people early on. You can't do a worldwide search and find the world's best marketing guy for your business. You're just not going to have that capability. Try to find people who are grounded in marketing or grounded in technology, grounded in operations, but are yet renaissance people that can listen to a market, listen to emerging customers, and translate those conversations into a product that works. That's how I think about team.
Craig, one of the things I've noticed in observing startups and entrepreneurs is that they run into what I'll call an energy deficit along the way. they simply lose focus, or they just aren't able to maintain the momentum of the business. Can you offer some advice as far as how you can sort of get around that and maintain the sense of excitement and energy that it takes to make a business succeed?
Know how you're motivated. Know what gets you out of bed. If it's the product, stay close to the product. If it's people, get out into the market, get out of the cave and go meet people and try to maintain energy. You know, if you do those things and you still run out of energy, that's telling you something. I mean, perhaps you need to shut it down and try again. Perhaps you need to go back to big business. There's nothing wrong with that. One of the things I love to talk to students about is, you know, is shutting down a business failure? And my students always look at me and say, are you crazy? Of course it is. And I say, you know, in a way, I get that, right? You're done. You tried something. It didn't work. You couldn't get enough customers. You couldn't raise that team. You couldn't raise enough money. I get that in a way, that's failure. But, you know, we're all on a journey. And then you go back to philosophy. We're all on a journey. And that's just a chapter, right? So, I mean, in a microcosm, is it a failure? Sure, I'll give you that, right? But is it really a failure? If you take those lessons and start something new or go back to a big company and leverage all those things you learned, I'm not sure. That looks a lot like success to me.
Craig, one of the buzzwords you'll hear in big business is work-life balance. And I'm curious to know if you think that exists for the entrepreneur. Is it possible to be in balance?
You're never in balance. You're always out of balance because there are so many things that you have to do to be successful. Just as you say it, Tom, as an entrepreneur, there are so many things you have to do to be successful. That when you're marketing, you're not building the product. When you're building the product, you're not out talking to anybody. When you're out talking to somebody, you're not doing operate. You're not raising money. You know, it goes on. The list goes on and on and on. So you're never in balance, but that's okay, right? You can embrace that. And if the core of what you're doing, if all these things taken together is something you have passion for, that's a great problem to have.
Craig, one of the things that entrepreneurs often face is people who are there to tell them why something can't be done. That sort of wall of resistance and negativity that can often greet somebody who's, you know, sort of trying out a new idea. Give me a sense of how you think one should deal with that.
When we face resistance, I ask people to ask the next question. And what I mean by that is when you say, Craig, no, I'm not interested. Don't give up that easily. Ask the next obvious question, which is, tell me why. Can you just offer me why? I'm not expecting to turn you into a believer in this 5-second interaction. Help me understand why. Give me some feedback. And if we can be open to feedback, you improve your ability the next time around. So, and that's part of, knowing yourself. And so when we get pushback, the pushback obviously is the hardest when it comes from ourself. So if there's self-doubt, that is the hardest. I've been there. That's in my first business. I got to a point where every night I was waking up thinking, is this just stupid? Am I just beating my head against a brick wall? And that's the worst part. And then the circle, it's concentric circles. So the next concentric circle is your family and those closest to you. If they're doubting, you have to balance two things. You have to balance the ability to listen and really understand why that doubt exists either in yourself or in that circle right around you. And then you have to make a hard decision. Do I keep pushing? Or do I listen to the feedback that's indicating that I should stop what I'm doing? By the way, I think this applies to every aspect of life, but I believe that one of the key tools is to ask the next question and just say, tell me exactly why, and then look for patterns over time. If you're getting the same pattern repeated, that's telling you something. Stop doing what you're doing. If it's just dislocated or based on personality or based on other contexts, then you may be getting a different answer. Like, I'm just going to keep pushing.
Craig, a lot of the people in our audience who would consider themselves entrepreneurs are actually people who work on commission. And of course, that's fluctuated in light of the recession. Any advice or thoughts about how they should deal with what's happening in the economy?
I've spent most of my career on commission. I know what that's like, and it's really, really hard. But the folks that do that best do sort of two things. They do that. They stay close to people, even when they're not expecting anything good to come back their way. and they do what I call just hard pounding. They keep making the calls. They keep making the contacts. They keep doing the meetings, even as they know that their average, their batting average is going to go from 2% down to 0.5%. And it's harder and harder to get out of bed and do that. But that's just those two things in combination, I think, make high performers.
Craig, as a teacher, I'm curious to know what advice you would offer the younger members of our audience. I'm thinking of the millennial generation and even the Gen Yers as they come into a very difficult economy.
The Generation Y folks, the younger folks that I serve as a professor in the classroom, I think there's some incredible positives that they bring to entrepreneurship and just bring to our economy. And then there's a couple things I think they could do better. So I'll speak to both. I think on the positive side, they have, you know, the obvious thing, they have tremendous energy. I find in my work that, and this will sound sort of cliche, but they're smarter than ever. I mean, it's just incredible how much knowledge these people have accumulated. And I'm constantly impressed and learning from them. And I think that knowledge combined with their energy can do great and will do great things. And I see that every day. That's one of the lucky things about one of my roles is I get to see that in real time. I think where they fall, the advice, and I'm pretty blunt about this, I mean, the advice that I give my students and my young people is get over your knowledge. So there's a very big plus that they bring all this knowledge to the table. But people won't come to you for your knowledge, right? You have to communicate very clearly and have empathy for others out there. And I think to extent this happens in every generation. I certainly know this when I was first starting out selling computers for IBM, I was on the south side of Chicago. I had 13 zip codes that I covered. And there was an arrogance there. I felt, well, I'm an IBMer, right? I mean, I got the answers. And I'm early 20s. And, you know, I don't think that arrogance ever got terrible, but it was there, right? I can admit that. And as I got more experience, I got more comfortable just listening. And that's where older people would look at me, and I could tell that the dynamic had changed. And it changed in my favor. If I relaxed, had more empathy for what my customers were trying to tell me, and listened, you open up all kinds of possibilities. And I literally have seen this in my own career where I think the thing that young people can do better, and I certainly could have done better when I was younger, is be less concerned that I have to demonstrate my knowledge and just ask great questions and listen. And then that opens up the possibility to demonstrate knowledge. There's such a secret in there. And as I've gotten, you know, as I've progressed through my career and been lucky and had mentors around me, all of that advice, both that I've gotten just as an entrepreneur, reactions from customers in the market, and then sort of privately from my mentors, of which I have two, it's the same theme. It's, you know what, you've accumulated knowledge, but it's only until you can open up a conversation with someone and truly relax into what they're trying to tell you and try to parse it and make it take shape that you can then, they will be willing for you to share their knowledge.
And conversely, speak to the Gen Xers and the older people in the audience, such as myself. What do you think we do well and what do you think we need to improve on?
I think one of the things we're good at is interpreting what's happening. And as we get older, we've accumulated this knowledge base. We have this experience base that's very powerful. And I think our responsibility is to help people recognize patterns. So, and again, same question, same response I have with older folks like me that I have to you, Tom, with the younger people. There's good and bad. So our ability to recognize patterns is very powerful. Our ability to pull in lots of information and then translate it into something that has meaning is very powerful. Our downside is the world does change. The economy is changing. And we need to consciously, with discipline, pick up new habits. And what I mean by new habits is just using new technologies, new ways of interacting with people. And we can't, you know, it's the same idea with entrepreneurship. Don't be afraid, right? Just try something. You may fail. You may sound like an idiot. The example I give my students is, why am I tweeting? I don't know. And they all laugh at me because they think, oh, God, Craig, get a clue, right? And I make fun of myself. You know, I don't know why I'm doing it. I don't know why anybody cares what I'm tweeting, but I'm doing it because I know I'm supposed to do it. And eventually, if I do it long enough, I'll realize why I'm doing it. Well, they don't ask, young people don't ask that question, but we do. The older people ask that question. But you know what? Push through it and do it anyway. And I'm not suggesting that you sit behind a computer all day and learn a new app a day. I'm not suggesting that at all. But try things that reach out. You will gain respect for those that are younger, right? Even if once in a while they make fun of you, but that can be great too for building a relationship where they feel safe making fun of you for trying some crazy new thing.
Craig, last question. What do you know now that you wish you knew then about being an entrepreneur?
What I wish I would have known, I became a first-time entrepreneur about 12 or 13 years ago. And this answer applies, Tom, to my prior career too. I mean, it's the same answer. I think about business now in some simple ways. Again, back to sort of pattern recognition. I think about business in simple ways. There's a framework that I use for myself and with others called knowledge, skills, and discipline. And one of the things I wish I had known is how to better balance those three things. Early in my career, you know, and we're all like this, I think. Early in my career, I was all about the accumulation of knowledge, right? And some places along the way, I was very fortunate. You know, IBM gave me skills because they brought in a kid who knew nothing about business. I came from Washington, D.C., the government. I knew nothing about business, and they helped me get skill. And what I mean by skill is handling an objection, holding a conversation with someone, opening a meeting correctly, closing a meeting correctly. Those are skills, right? And we can learn those skills. Knowledge is them teaching me about the business world or learning on my own about the business world. But then there's this other third leg of the stool that is all important in our business lives and as entrepreneurs, and that's discipline. And I look back in my career, and if I'm honest with myself, there are years when I had tremendous discipline, and there are years that I didn't have tremendous discipline. And the years that I did, I just killed it. And in the years that I didn't, I was horrible. And no amount of knowledge or skill could bring me the distance. You have to have those three things in balance. And as I get older, I consciously think, you know, how am I accumulating knowledge? Am I trying new things? Am I learning about, you know, Google AdWords? Am I learning about Twitter? Am I reaching out to new apps and how they could possibly help me, right? And that's the acquisition of knowledge. And then how am I fine-tuning my skills? And do I still have discipline? And I ask people to think a lot about that because that's something I wish I would have known, been conscious of sort of that model, because I believe I would have realized that in some months and years, I was out of balance. I was thinking, well, I'm smart, and that's going to take me the distance. Well, you know what, Craig? Who cares if you're smart? If you're not making the calls, or you're not having the meetings, or you're not attempting a new business, nobody cares how smart you are. And it's in that combination, I think there's a secret there. And there's a secret to better performance.
Craig, I'm happy to say you're going to be joining us again for another podcast about storytelling and its importance in creating a business. But I just wanted to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a delight.
To listen to more Alter Group podcasts or to read our Alter Now blog, visit www.altergroup.com.